from Studio 2. He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again. In anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks. But super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That is right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, here on this Monday, January 12th, here on this wonderful Reaction Monday to the NFL weekend. Very excited to have you here. Big sports weekend here in the Central Valley as well, and we got to get to it right away. Good to have you in here. Good to be here. Good to be alongside you all, and hope you're enjoying your time off from that weekend, and now you're back and ready for the grind, and we're here to get you through it all the way till wild card Monday Night Football between the Steelers and the Texans to wrap up the wild card weekend. What a wild one it has been so far, and we'll dive into those storylines momentarily. Reminder, of course, we're live on the 1430 ESPNFresno.com website, and we're also live on the ESPN Fresno app, so be sure to go to those platforms if you want to listen to our audio version live and on demand. Tony D Show, my show, and Paul Metter's show, all there. Sportsline Bowling Hour, Tony D, Behind the Bench with me, Central Valley Sports Report with Paul Metters. So there you go. Good selections here for your local programming alongside, plus all your other awesome events, like including high school hoops, which, by the way, we got tomorrow night, 6:30 between Hoover and Justin Garza. We'll be there tomorrow, 6:15 pregame. Big thanks to Tony for tossing it to us in the previous hour. If you want to get in on our show, the Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing Hotline is here for you, 559-320-1430. Surely you want to sound off on your teams from this weekend, and we want to hear from you. Some big Bulldog news, of course, coming across the timeline here as well. Seeing some names returning. That should be very exciting for this roster. We'll get into that later in the show today. Two hours before we send it to Pittsburgh for the Steelers and the Texans. Lee's Air Weather Check sitting at 60 degrees today and sunny. Feels perfect here in the Central Valley for y'all. Just a wonderful, wonderful feeling here in the middle part of January, early parts of 2026. Hope you're doing well out there and enjoying the perfect weather as we have it. Also, just want to remind you folks what we're going to be talking about today. Like I said, reacting to the NFL week. We'll have a Who's Been Oddie, Who's Been Ice of the weekend as well. We'll dive right all into it. No guests today. It is just good old-fashioned deep dive look at what happened over the weekend. And my goodness, what a weekend it was. So many storylines to get to. But before we dive into the sports and the nitty-gritty of it, I got to check in on my folks who are here with me. Tanvir is here producing along with Jorge, who's on the live stream, which we're now live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch, ESPN Fresno platforms. Guys, good to have you here. Happy Monday. And I'm sure it's a happier Monday than most for both of you coming into this show. But I think I know the answer to this. How was your weekend, guys? How are you doing?
It was good. My weekend was eventful.
Yeah, sure.
You know, mm-hmm. Niners won, so, yeah, you know.
Burying the lead.
I mean, what else can I say?
Bang, bang, Niner gang, as you all say.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Something like that.
Tanvir, how are we feeling?
We're feeling good. My full superstitious self was on display. I sent you a picture of me going and playing soccer by myself while watching the game on my phone, and it worked out.
There
so,
you go.
I know the 49ers won all because of me.
All because of you. No other situations, no other big plays from the game. No, they knew Tanvir was playing soccer, and that is the reason they had hope and the ability to get by the Philadelphia Eagles, a game where a lot of people really – I think counted the Niners out. I think that that is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. People counted out the Niners in this weekend. I even was saying that myself because it was just a multitude of injuries on injuries on injuries. And we thought this beautiful, weird, wild season this Niners team has had so far up to this point was going to come to an end. It just the wheels falling off the wagon, per se, from last week's game against Seattle, and it just kind of felt like the magic carpet ride was coming to an end. And then the Philadelphia Eagles became the Philadelphia Eagles in the bad and most horrible way. And I'm not going to take discredit the Niners just quite yet on it, but what a remarkable game in that. But we can talk about the Niners here first, but I want to go big picture just in the playoffs. These are the first five games. Guys, I'm sure you were locked in on most games or tried to find a way to watch all of the every quarter of this wild card weekend. Any big picture stuff from this weekend that you guys had in your minds from what you observed?
Yeah, I mean, I talked to you a little bit earlier. The atmospheres of some of these games for new teams that haven't been in the playoffs for a very long time or had any consequential games in a very long time. We're talking Carolina. We're talking Chicago. I think all those atmospheres were very fun to watch. And for all of the talk that the Chiefs not being in the playoffs would make these playoffs suck, I'm talking to you, Rich Eisen. I mean, we've had one of the most fun wild card weekends of all time, and I think that this is going to be capped off hopefully with a great game. But these we've been 4-5 for this weekend.
You want a tangible stat to go with that that kind of notion?
Please back me up.
11 go ahead touchdowns scored in the fourth quarter so far this postseason. That is two more than any entire postseason next to it. So we have had incredible finishes down the stretch of all of these games, outside of my Patriots, just, you know, ho-hum in the L.A. Chargers last night. I'll take that, honestly. I don't need the drama. But outside of that, the close nature of these games, the teams that you feel like are dead suddenly coming back to life, the twists and turns, and I don't know if it's totally unexpected, the winners out there. There are some underdogs that are able to handle business in some fashion. I think someone considered the Buffalo Bills an underdog in that season. Of course, the Niners are an underdog. Even, I would say, the Bears in some weird fashion were kind of the underdogs this weekend as well for some people who want to consider that. So underdogs have been particularly strong in this playoffs. But we knew, because it's a very strange playoff field in general because of it. The underdog nature of the playoffs, including the Niners, it's remarkable.
And even your game with your, you know, Patriots, that was close.
Yeah, it was close. I mean,
points close.
Yeah.
Didn't really feel that way in the field, but the points were close. And I think it's just because all the teams that went in either had a similar record or had already faced each other before.
Yeah.
And there was something there that, you know, the Panthers had already beat the Rams. So they were out there, you know, trying to do the same thing again.
Yeah.
Even though they have a worse record. And they felt like they were, you know, battling against everything. But at the end of the day, you know, the Rams were just a better team. And that's how it went for a lot of the games out there.
Well, let's start with, let's not bury the lead. We are starting with the game that I think we all want to talk about and dissect here right now, and that is the 49ers victory over the Philadelphia Eagles. But let's remind ourselves how that game wrapped up.
The ball is at the 49ers 21. They lead by four. 43 seconds left. Goddard and Brown to the right. Dotson and Smith to the left, and Barkley beside Hurts.
49ers showing heavy, heavy pressure. Let's see if they peel out.
They back out. Hurts shotgun snap. Hurts steps up. Middle. Knocked away by Eric Kendricks. The 49ers take over on downs. Do you believe in this team? What a play. The defense asked time and time again. And now the offense comes out of the field, and they can put this thing away here in Philly.
How about the pride of Hoover High? Eric Kendricks coming up big. They were playing a guy named Wallows out there. I mean, we were picking up the scrap heap for the Niners there in terms of the defense. But 19 points held for the Philadelphia Eagles in that football game. Jalen Hurts just 20 for 35, 168 through the air, just one touchdown. Saquon Barkley, you know, for his production, 26 carries for 106 yards, 4.1 on the average. You know, it could have been a lot worse with Saquon. A.J. Brown, just 3 catches for 25 yards on 7 targets. Remarkable, remarkable stuff from the Niners. If I don't know if you would have believed it in terms of the production, that the Eagles would only average 4.3 yards per play instead of the Niners with 6.2 yesterday. The Niners would turn the ball over 2 times. The Niners would not take away the ball at all in this game, and yet a 4-point victory for the 49ers on the road, and now they're heading to Seattle. How do you put into words a game like this? I don't know if there are many, but remarkable is where I sit. And what a game. What a game. And, yeah, Guy Haberman from KMVR, former Fresno, ESPN Fresno personality as well, put it best. Do you believe in this team? And I believe every Niner fan has to believe in this team moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think DeMarcus Robinson said it best in his interview with Tom Brady after the game. This team is resilient, and for all of the injuries, we keep harping on all these injuries, but, you know, this is no joke of an injury list. This is all pros left and right, and for this team to go into Philadelphia, a game where, you know, a couple of years ago they lost this game in a very bad fashion in the NFC Championship game, to still right those wrongs, even after blowing the Eagles out a year later after that, it is a very cathartic victory for this team. It is still going to be very difficult for this team to have success because of the losses of George Kittle. Nick Bosa is still going to be out, but with Fred Warner possibly coming back, with Ricky Pearsall possibly coming back, you never know where this 49ers team can go. So for the 49ers, I mean, absolutely amazing victory. Brock Purdy played amazing for a guy that had the 2 interceptions. To go back out there and have a game-winning drive for this team is remarkable. And a stat that I saw earlier today, Brock Purdy now has 4 game-winning playoff game-winning drives in the postseason since he was a starter in 2022. The only person that has more is Mahomes at 5. Everybody else has no more than 1. So that just goes to show how great Brock Purdy has been for the 49ers.
6 career go-ahead passing touchdowns in the fourth quarter, excuse me, and his second in his postseason career, including, you know, the touchdown pass to McCaffrey. Remarkable resolve from Brock Purdy, who actually, ironically enough, the statistics don't really back it up, because when George left the field in that injury, and I have the time of when it happened, 6:03 to go in the second quarter, when the Philadelphia Eagles just scored a touchdown on Dallas Goedert for 9 yards. First play from scrimmage for the Niners is when George Kittle goes down, and yet you find Juwan Jennings, you find for 45 yards, you find McCaffrey to get set up into a field goal situation in the swirling winds, and Eddie P making that field goal to at least keep it to a 3-point lead at that moment. Kept the game feeling very manageable in certain situations. I thought it was such a good response there. I know the end of the half was quite a mess, but let's be fair, the Niners were dealing with a whole lot going on in that situation. But you can pick and parse whatever you want. But outside of it, it ended up in a victory. We'll talk about the impact of George Kittle's injury, of course, and it can make it official, I believe. This injury report brought to you by Davis and Van Wagenen, that George Kittle now out for obviously the rest of the postseason, potentially most of next year as well, with an Achilles injury. We'll see how long the rehab is for him, but he is no longer going to play for the 49ers this postseason run. Jorge, what stood out most for you in yesterday's game for the 49ers, their victory over the Eagles, and what the remarkable moments you can look back to in that game?
I think the ability to actually get yards on the run. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there weren't a lot, but they were crucial to keep the momentum going, especially after those 2 and out series that they had, the two series that were 3 and out each.
Yeah.
They got the field goal. It felt like they were doing okay on defense, and it felt like they were managing the game, and it wasn't getting out of hand. And I think that helped out in entirety. Having Williams back was completely changed the game. You know, that O-line was moving faster, and then, yeah, Kittle left towards the end of the half. first half, and that kind of changed things. But, I mean, we next man up, I guess.
Next man up, for sure. The Eagles were playing in much better field position. You were watching this game. Here are the possessions where the Eagles started. You know, they had the pick on Purdy, and the ball was at the 48 of Philly in that third quarter. And the Niners are able to force a punt there, like remarkable defensive sequence there in that situation for the 49ers to just only allow actually, the Eagles lost 4 yards based off a penalty in that series.
How many points did they get off the interception?
Three total points. They had the field goal at 8 minutes in the fourth quarter after the second pick from Purdy. And here's Purdy's number. I don't know if it's not really – it doesn't correlate to, like, the success of whatever to the game, because I don't know if it's like – I don't think Brock Purdy played worse when Kittle was off the field, but the stats kind of say it. He threw the two picks when he didn't have Kittle there. He did throw the touchdown pass, and, of course – we had the other touchdown pass for Juwan Jennings, who
four-star quarterback Juwan Jennings,
who,
that is,
by the way, can stand in the pocket and take a hit. Let me tell you, delivering that to McCaffrey, and what a boneheaded, brutal mistake from the Eagles to just let McCaffrey get behind that play. But the Niners capitalized in that sense, and
yeah, terrible by Reed Blankenship,
horrible,
for following McCaffrey but sticking in the middle of the zone to not follow him all the way to the end zone. Yeah, it was just a bad pickup.
I was telling Phil earlier today that Purdy just kind of stood there.
Well, yeah, he had a chance to block the guy who obliterated Juwan Jennings.
Dude, that's the best defensive tackle in the NFL, and Jalen Carter, man.
You're not doing that.
No.
Yeah, Brock, I think every coach, including Kyle, is like, Brock, that was the right decision. Juwan can take a hit. Juwan's fine. He can take a hit. He can handle it. But what a remarkable series of events. And the defense needed one stop at the end, and I know the Eagles' offensive play calls really felt vanilla down the tail end of that.
Vanilla is underselling how poor this offensive play calling was.
Unbelievably basic, and Robert Saleh, you are not going to get much by him when you're going to run kind of schemes like that down the stretch, and key drops. Yeah, it felt like a Niner day, and it felt like a Niner night, and the Niners traveling back. And, of course, the only bad news outside of the Kittle injury is that the Niners have to turn on a short week, go play Saturday, which we still don't know the game time for in Seattle, and that's what they'll face next. I don't want to quite preview that game just yet in this show, but it's going to be interesting to see how the team responds. Of course, now we have the specter of a Fred Warner snap count potentially return in this next game and what he can provide, and it's going to be remarkable to see how this all shapes up for the 49ers. McCaffrey, by the way, another streak continued for him. Consecutive game scoring a touchdown in the postseason. He is now up to 8. He has to score next week to tie Thurman Thomas for most all-time in the postseason. Christian McCaffrey also now most consecutive games in a postseason with 100 scrimmage yards and a touchdown. He would need 2 more to tie Terrell Davis from the late 90s with the Broncos. But he ties Marcus Allen and John Riggins. Ever heard of him? Anyways, fantastic stuff. Also, Juwan Jennings, prolific passer. I think he now holds the record for best passing rating above, what was it? He has the highest passer rating ever?
In playoff history and Super Bowl history, he has the highest passer rating of all time in the playoffs.
Wow. Because he beat Peyton Manning out. Peyton Manning had a near-perfect passer rating.
Yep.
I think it was against Denver in like 04, if I'm not mistaken. And
that's 2 passes, right?
Yep.
2 passes.
2 touchdowns.
So 2 for 2. 2 touchdowns.
Two for two.
Both to McCaffrey.
Can I want to compliment like how they use the guys afterwards, too, in that offense. Kyle Juszczyk was remarkable in that game. He was one of my favorite pieces what the Niners used with him, basically turning him into pseudo Kittle. In that stretch, and I wonder how much he'll be utilized in that game. And Jake Tonn, just, you know, he'll have to show up in the next game kind of in that capacity as well. But the prospect of knowing you get Ricky back potentially next week too and saving him there, potential for Fred, guys, I mean, it could be a different story than a week ago in Seattle next week. I'm feeling a little differently about this Niner team going into Saturday.
I mean, it's not something that this team hasn't faced. And
yeah,
in all reality, the two guys that aren't injured that has been a constant on this team are Robert Saleh and Kyle Shanahan. And for two guys that were coaching their asses off last night. I think this is Kyle Shanahan's best coaching performance of the year, possibly of his entire career.
Fortunately, because, doesn't go to the award.
Yeah, right.
The votes have already been cast.
Exactly. And so one can just hope that it goes to him, but we'll see. There are a lot of great candidates out there like Vrabel and Ben Johnson. But just coming back to this team, last night really felt like boys against men in terms of the coaching.
Yeah.
Kevin Petullo versus Robert Saleh, total mismatch. Kevin Petullo's, if he's not fired by tonight, I think that is malpractice from that front office. But then also, Kyle Shanahan being able to beat Vic Fangio. This is not a poor man's defensive coordinator. This is a Super Bowl winning defensive coordinator with a lot of experience.
Yeah.
And for Kyle Shanahan to do that, it was remarkable. And now you go into Seattle, you still have those two guys. I think with, regardless of the players that are out there, you have to give it up for these two coaches, and they're going to give these 49ers a chance to win any game in this postseason.
We're going to think about the Niner fans, I imagine, are thinking about this one for a long time. Going to be thinking about this game for a long time.
One of the greatest 49ers playoff victories of the 21st century. I think that is for sure. I'm not going to say it's the best because we had the Giants game,
but with the stakes and what was surrounded and what was
the Lions NFC Championship
and
too.
What people thought of going into the game, like the surprise nature of how the game played out.
Yeah, and I think too one of the things was that we finally got a revenge in the postseason against them. You know,
your revenge the next year.
The 42-19 wasn't enough.
No,
look, they always talked about it, fans, the Eagles fans, have always talked about it that it wasn't in the playoffs. So
now you're in your house
and in the playoffs.
I'm with them though.
Well, now 2013 going to be on the mind of these Niner fans moving forward.
Exactly.
Anyway, not 2013. We don't want to revisit that, right?
2022 didn't count.
No, that was in Santa Clara. I'm talking in their house. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we got some more playoffs to talk about. How about fire by his own Josh Allen doing it all yesterday for the Bills? We'll talk about that next on 1430 ESPN.
Allen under center. Gets the snap. The push Gilliam into the end zone. It's a Buffalo touchdown. And the Buffalo Bills come into Jacksonville and take it away from the Jaguars. 27-24, the final score. Buffalo advances in the NFL playoffs. A thriller in Jacksonville in the wild card round.
That's right. Josh Allen and the Bills moving on into the divisional round to take on the Denver Broncos, Josh Allen, and Buffalo getting it done. How about the pride at Central Valley? We continue our theme. We gave the praise to Eric Kendricks, of course, with the big play at the end. But I think in a bigger scheme, looking at what Josh Allen did, he might be the most remarkable performance of the weekend if you're going to go so far of the individual players in the first five games that have been played. Maybe Caleb Williams has a somewhat argument with that, but I think Josh Allen has an argument for one of the best performances of the weekend so far. Jorge, you got something to say about it.
Can you explain what he's... Because people on the web didn't hear that.
People on the what?
On the web. On our stream.
Oh.
Didn't hear that.
Didn't hear what?
The call.
Oh, the play call? Oh. Yeah, we played the call. We played the call of the touchdown. I don't know. Sorry.
I can recreate it. Touchdown Bills. They win the game.
Then Trevor Lawrence throws a pick. Asa, don't listen. Sorry. I'm trying my best to give us a good show here, Jorge. So I know you're worried about the copyright infringement stuff, so I get that. For the people who did not watch or were watching the stream, we played the touchdown call of Josh Allen scoring the game-winning touchdown that eventually gave the Buffalo Bills the 27-24 lead and eventually secured a victory with the interception that routed it out. What I thought, if I had to pick of the game I thought that was just ostensibly played the best between both teams, I think that game, Jags and Bills, especially that second half, was so remarkably well done, well played by both teams, back and forth, trading points, all this stuff. I thought the Jags were a little shaky in the first half, not going to lie. And I know my friend, who is a Jaguars fan, will yell every ounce of his being to say, hey, Liam Cohen, why were you not running the ball more? I think that might be the one, you know, hiccup into what the Jaguars were doing yesterday. But outside of that, here's Josh Allen doing everything and everything in his human power to win this football game. You know, multiple go-ahead pass and rush touchdowns in the fourth quarter of a playoff game. He had those distinctions today or yesterday in that game as well. Josh Allen, the third quarterback in Bills history with a game-winning drive in the fourth quarter or OT of a postseason game, including Jim Kelly and Frank Reich. And by the way, Josh Allen gets the monkey off his back. He wins on the road. That's the first Buffalo road win, what, since the 90s? Is that what I'm remembering? Like, I think it's since 97 or something crazy like that. Or it might even be like the 80s. I was reading a stat somewhere that was the first Bills road win in quite some time. What do you guys make of the Josh Allen performance? Because I put it up as one of the best individual performances of the weekend, if we're going to go considering that. I thought he played good, the remarkable start from finish throughout that game.
Yeah, 1992. Was the last time.
92, okay.
They won a road playoff game. As for Josh Allen, I mean, he's a monster. I think that by the end of this season, he's probably going to be my number one quarterback in terms of my personal rankings. But this guy, I've said it in the last couple of weeks, the Bills are going to go as far as this guy goes. And even in that case, there's still that thought process in the back of your mind that this defense is going to somehow throw this game like he has been accustomed to over the last couple of years. But Josh Allen, 28 for 35, 273 and a touchdown through the air, and then 11 carries for 33 and two TDs on the ground. I mean, he is the quintessential dual threat quarterback, but, you know, maybe not as great of a runner as Lamar Jackson, but he has the power. And some of the throws that he was making were absolutely insane. The Brandon Cooks pass at the end of the game that set up the touchdown, mm-hmm. the long pass. I mean, for a guy, you have a defender just running in your face, and to throw that on your back foot about 40 yards was absolutely insane. And then just the leg drive to go from that fourth and inches to the 1 yard line from the five was insane. So exceptional performance by Josh Allen. Even with the guys that are around him, being able to spread the ball around was great.
To have no fear, too, with the defender in front of him to throw that football. Remember, he hurt his finger at the beginning of that game. And as a player, you think about that. You feel that the whole game. You think about how it affects you and the way you throw a football and how much extension you want to get to your throw if you know you have guys in front of you. And Josh Allen did not wince at his mechanics. He played the way he always played, which was no fear. And of course, I think you think about the play of him on fourth down with about about a minute to go in the game, and they do that tush push, and he's just churning and churning and churning. And I think the Jags like gave up on the play, thinking it was like forward progress was over, but they just kept going, and it was remarkable. Just kind of shows to you what how much of a monster this guy is, and I would put him up against anybody. I don't think anybody can be put up against Josh Allen in terms of the short yardage game situations. I feel like 100% of the time they're going to get those fourth down short yardage situations in that game. I thought if the Bills struggled to run, that the Jags would have no problem beating this team. And yet, even with the Bills, James Cook only 46 yards yesterday on 15 carries, you're averaging 3 yards a carry on 26 rushes. When you're counting the Josh Allen stats, that is a recipe where I say, well, I would believe the Jags would be winning by 10 with that stat line. It did help for the Buffalo Bills that Trevor Lawrence threw picks, a big one in the beginning of the game, of course, the one that ended it there as well. And the difference was a field goal. And by the way, the Bills got a field goal on that first pick from Trevor Lawrence. And of course, Cam Little missing a huge field goal at the end of the half as well. It is a game of inches in the National Football League, and that's where you could point to in terms of that. But props to the Bills. They absolutely played lights out on either side of the ball, in my opinion, in that football game.
Yeah, the reason why I thought the Jaguars were going to win that game is because they have the best rush defense of the remaining playoff teams. And for a team that hasn't been able to necessarily throw the ball down the field because of their lack of weapons, I thought that was going to be it. James Cook did not have a good performance, and I thought that was basically telegraphed with the type of guys that the Jaguars have in the front seven. But for Khalil Shakir and Keon Coleman and Brandon Cooks to come up big in big moments, and with Josh Allen playing how well he did, they kind of flipped the script, in my opinion, and won this game because of their passing game. And so props to the Bills. Their defense came up big in moments, had those two interceptions. And for a back-and-forth game, I just felt like, once again, the Bills were going to be subject to last team that has the ball is going to win, and they came up with a massive interception at the end of the game. So, I mean, the Bills, they're going to have to face a insane defense next week.
Yeah.
But for this specific game, I think it was a massive win for Josh Allen, which I think for Josh Allen's legacy, this is a massive playoff run because there's no Mahomes, no Lamar, no Burrow.
Of course.
You gotta. I'm not gonna. I'm just gonna put it on that he needs to get to the Super Bowl because he is the final remaining guy in that elite tier of quarterbacks. Stafford's on the other side, obviously, but I think it's massive for Josh Allen's legacy that he does really well in these playoffs, and he started off really well.
This one's so important. That game for him was so. You think about the floodgates that allows you to kind of go into, like, when you think of great runs through the playoffs, the one example I always think of, if you're rooting for the Bills, if you're going to be a Bills fan rooting for Buffalo and you're rooting for Josh Allen to make a run to the Super Bowl, you think about other runs that have been equated to this. I think of the most clear and evident example of it is Rodgers in 2010, like just kind of getting over the hump in that way, or even Roethlisberger, who struggled in his rookie year when they were impossible to beat, and then the next year they were barely inching their way into the playoffs, and they went through as a sixth seed, World Warriors basically, and took down the entire NFL and won a Super Bowl. Josh Allen has the opportunity to have a run like this, and it's against opponents that we don't necessarily feel are complete juggernauts. We know the flaws of the Denver Broncos. Is it going to be an easy game for Buffalo? No chance it's going to be easy for them, because it's another game where Josh Allen will have to run for his life in terms of...
It's also a team that's only lost once this year at home.
Exactly. But it was to a team they just beat, Jacksonville. And so it shows the nature of it. And then if you progress to the next round, whether it's Pittsburgh, Houston, or New England, we're sitting in a scenario where we feel confident that because the quarterback is the quarterback, Josh Allen has an opportunity to overcome everything that is laid in front of him because he has shown it in this game yesterday. It is a floodgate opening moment. It is just a question of, are we actually going to experience this kind of run? Because one team does this every year. Your Niners fully capable of doing this a couple times.
Yeah, both six seeds, I think, have a shot.
You know what I'm talking about? Like we've seen six seeds become absolutely dangerous through these runs, and this Bills team might be the most dangerous of them all. It's just a matter of what we see week in and week out. But I think, you know, we did the quarterback trust rankings a couple weeks before the season ended. I think there's still a dude just above Josh Allen, but I'm having a hard time really parsing between one and two. And we'll get to that other dude in a second in terms of that. But I think that is the evidence is 100% there right now to indicate that, to me, I think the Buffalo Bills are wholeheartedly in it to win a Super Bowl this year based off of yesterday's performance.
It is a very weird thing when you look at these playoffs, because I'm taking the Houston Pittsburgh out of this because we don't know who's going to win.
Yeah.
But of the three divisional matchups that we know, we technically do trust the road quarterback more than the home quarterback in our rankings per se, right? Mm-hmm. Purdy, we trust more than Darnold. We trust Stafford more than Caleb, and we trust Josh Allen more than Bo Nix. So it's going to be a very interesting dichotomy of which team is going to win. Is it going to be the quarterbacks that we trust, or is it going to be the new kids on the block with some great defenses, besides the Bears, that can really get it done in the end?
One last point on this Bills game, because I really thought Jacksonville matched up well with the Bills, and Josh Allen became the antidote to the matchup woes that the Bills were facing with Jackson.
The kryptonite.
You know, the kryptonite versus that, right? And so when you have a quarterback that can overcome these shortcomings, Jaguars, number one in rush defense, the Bills, very good at their run game. If their run game doesn't get going, they don't get going, theoretically. And yet, Khalil Shakir goes for 12 for 82. And Brandon Cooks is making big plays, including a 36-yarder at a big opportunity. Keon Coleman showing up when he was just benched for like 4 weeks.
Yeah, his one catch was big.
You know what I mean? They're going to miss Gabe Davis
yeah,
with the knee injury.
Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox, both guys are just – it's so weird because I don't know who's on the field every time. When Dalton Kincaid caught that touchdown, like, virtually that's Dawson Knox.
Yeah. One had 33 for 30 and one had 3 for 28 in the touchdown. Do you know which one had the touchdown?
Well, I know Dalton Kincaid had the touchdown now, right, but in the moment, I actually thought it was Dawson Knox because they're 88 and 86, so I also think like they're the same number.
Josh Allen's playoff run is just this. We are now, and I'll probably call it now, what I saw yesterday elevates the Bills for me. Like, this is the start of something special potentially in this postseason.
Is it fair to me that I need one more game?
That's fair.
I just feel like I've seen Josh do this. But when it comes to that hallmark game, it's been against the Chiefs the last couple of years. But when it comes to that hallmark game, I just think not Josh, but the rest of the team just doesn't show up.
Well, Denver's a good place to test that theory.
Yep.
And we'll see what it looks like. What, Saturday? TBD on the time and channel. But anyways. All right, let's take another break. We got a Rams game to break down here next. So stay with us. We're just getting started here. I'm behind the bench on 1430. Welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader here on this Monday. My headphones got a little weird there. I was only hearing half the noise there. Anyways, hey, we had another game happen early this weekend. We had to go all the way back. Go all the way back to your memory bank. First game of the weekend. You remember who played? Oh, yeah, it was those Rams playing the Panthers. This is how this one wrapped up.
Out of the shotgun, Stafford looking down the middle, launching to the right side. A reaching grab at the pylon. Parkinson hauls it in. Oh, man. Colby Parkinson using all of that 6'7" frame right at the fringe of the field to bring it in high. It's a Rams touchdown. 38 seconds to go to take the lead around Trayvon Merrick. A dance step leading to seismic activity on the ground. And Parkinson gives the Rams the lead.
Courtesy of Westwood One there. And, thinking of all the touchdown passes this weekend, that might be my favorite. If I'm going to think about great touchdown passes, I think Stafford to Parkinson, where it was put, it was impossible for the defender to defend that. Just a beautiful catch right where it needed to be. I think I'm going to say that's the touchdown pass of the weekend for me.
Yeah, Jawan's got a case.
Wide open, though.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I will agree with you. I think that the Rams, it was a little bit of a scare, though.
Yeah.
Won't you agree?
Well, okay. We'll get to the concerns.
Yeah, you
we'll get you to the concerns. I have concerns. But the Rams, 34-31 victors over the Carolina Panthers. They move on. They're heading to Chicago next weekend for what should just be an electric factory of a game there on the lakefront. But Rams coming back. Trading the lead back and forth with the Carolina Panthers toe for toe. And, you know, I literally posed the question when we do the quarterback trust rankings of who do you trust with 2 minutes and plus down by four to score you a touchdown when you need it. And, Stafford, of course, delivering in that moment when he wasn't really playing a great football game. His finger got hit just kind of like Josh Allen's was in that game. He did throw a pick earlier in that game. He should have thrown a couple, actually, to be honest with you. It wasn't a perfect game. The completion percentage, by far the worst, I think, Stafford had all season. And yet, 24 for 42, 300-plus yards passing, 3 touchdowns on that Panther defense, which I think that Panther defense has pieces. I think those corners are pretty physical in terms of Devontae. Boy, I hope he's okay.
J.C. Horn had him in a lock.
Yeah. Even then, yeah, Devontae was targeted 13 times, only caught 5 balls. That's hard to do to Devontae Adams in terms of it. But Puka with some really uncharacteristic bad drops in certain situations. He had a walk-in touchdown, completely dropped there. But outside of it, the Rams made the plays they needed to make and got out of a situation where, let's be honest, that was turning south real quick on the road. But gutsy is how I describe the Rams' victory over the Panthers. How would you describe it there, Tanvir?
Scary. I think that my trust in the Rams has kind of gotten shaken over this last game. And I'm not saying that the Rams' offense isn't all world. Like, Puka Nacua is still that guy. Matthew Stafford is still the QB I trust the most. Devontae Adams is still elite. But this is a team where, you know, you had two NFC South opponents over the last three games. And, you know, they still came out there, won the game. So good for them. But the defense is where I find a little bit more issue. They have been getting gashed by these running games. You know, I'm talking Chuba Hubbard and you know, Chuba Hubbard had two touchdowns in this game. Not necessarily yardage, but then Bijan Robinson had that too. Quentin Lake, I thought coming back would do wonders for this team in the back end. And the secondary, I think, is where I have the most issue, because Xavier Leggett and Jalen Coker were just playing so good in this game. Bryce Young was dialing up great corner routes and out routes to both of those guys. And that's where my concern happens. But this team is still very good. It's still the team that I trust the most in these playoffs to win the whole thing. But yes, my confidence has been shaken a little bit in this team because of their performances. Wow. And now you're playing against probably the three best remaining teams in the NFC for sure, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and it's the confidence is shaken for sure because there's turnovers there. The special teams reared its ugly head with that blocked punt, which actually, funny enough, actually may have worked in the Rams' favor, because the short field for Carolina allowed them to score a little early. Because if Carolina had the ball and it had to go 70 yards with about 4 minutes to go, I would imagine that would go maybe a little differently. Instead of them scoring with 2:39 to go, maybe they'd be scoring with about 38 seconds to go like the Rams did, and they would have the 31-27 victory we'd be talking about there. Go ahead, Jorge.
No, I think that the Rams have been suffering from something throughout the entire season, and that's that disconnect somewhere down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, they kind of just become a regular team. You know, they get scored on, they get flustered, they get, you know, they make errors, and the other team usually takes advantage of that. And that's how some of their losses came up to be. And when they're clicking, they're good. They're outstanding. But when that disconnect happens, they just become another regular team.
They had struggles on third down, 3 for 13 there for the Rams in terms of it. The Panthers really, really were giving that game away to the Rams too, right? 0 for 3 on the fourth down attempts for the Panthers too, which feel like turnovers there. And the Rams don't really feel like they took advantage of those turnover situations as well. But outside of it, you know, I think there are certain situations where we respect the ceiling of the Rams, because we've seen it this year, and you're wondering when it can all be put together. But like I said before, in the playoffs, all you got to do is just win the first one, and then the floodgates open for it. And maybe there's an opportunity for this Rams team to have that floodgate moment. I'd be very concerned with the turnover situation that the Rams are kind of dealing with in recent memory.
They could have had another one. I think it was either Mike Jackson or J.C. Horn. Yeah. Puka Nacua basically had a PBU against them.
Yeah.
So that could have been another interception in terms of the turnover department.
And guess who you face is the best turnover team on defense in the NFL, which is the Chicago Bears. You do not make mistakes against the Chicago Bear defense. We know this, and we'll talk about it in the next hour of what the Packers dealt with in terms of it. But survive in advance. And sometimes that's how it goes. It didn't look pretty though. And I'd sit here and be really concerned about some certain situations about this offense, like the productivity, how physical that defense can get on this offense and kind of stunt it a little bit in terms of it. But to be fair, when we're talking about a stunted Rams offense and they put up 34, then, like, you know,
we are really nitpicking here if we're for real.
Yeah.
Because this team is still elite.
Exactly. And playoff football is playoff football. But it's alarming when Puka drops some passes, and it's just a little like, whoa, what's going on there in terms of it?
I don't know which – I feel like I'm more concerned about the defense versus – I think the offense is going to be fine, because I think if you play sound football against this Bears defense, you will be fine. They allow so many yards, so many touchdowns. It's that, you know, aggressiveness. Either you're going to give up a lot of yards, which they did in that first half in the Packers game, or you're going to get turnovers. And that's kind of how this Bears defense has been. I am more concerned because Caleb Williams has been lighting it up. And for an offense like the Bears, who has been playing exceptional over the last couple of weeks, they've found Colston Loveland as a target. DJ Moore has been playing, he played a little bit better in the last game. Roma Dunze is back. I am very concerned about this secondary facing this passing game because I think Caleb Williams is playing his best ball of his career right now.
It's going to be an interesting game for sure. We'll preview it later in the week in terms of it. But the Rams get away with one in Carolina. They take care of business. I just want to just say I think Carolina valiantly should have got it. I don't think they – I know we were negative and we're like, should they not even be in the playoffs? I think they allowed themselves to deserve themselves in the dance with that performance. That was as good as they could be.
Yeah, big shout-out to them because for a team that has to play an elite team twice, to play them as good as they did again, what is just – you know, that shows that this is a really good team. And they have a lot of good young players coming up for next year.
It's going to be an interesting
game. I think this is a great experience for them because they're really young, the Panthers. So they're going to have a good team coming up.
We'll see.
And a tough NFC South in the future.
Yeah. The Saints, man. Coming on strong.
Hey, Falcons could get Harbaugh.
They could get other things, too. All right. Wrap up hour number one here. We're going to do that. Coming up next, we got the Who's Been Naughty, Who's Been Nice of the Wild Card Weekend. And I'll tell you what, there's going to be some fire and brimstone coming from me on the naughty side. So stay with us. Second hour coming up next on 1430 ESPN.
He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again in anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, man. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks, but super excited to be here.
Phil Benatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN, Fresno Valley's local sports leader here on this Monday, 1 hour before the final game of the Wild Card Weekend. I'm seeing images on my TV of Aaron Rodgers walking into the stadium earlier today. Looked like around 1:30 our time, so getting ready to go. CJ Stroud getting ready to go. Houston fans getting ready to go. Steeler fans getting ready to go. Should be a good one. We'll get to that game later in this hour. We got some things to talk about, of course, though, and we got to do a Who's Been Naughty, Who's Been Nice of the Weekend. We were talking Niners, Eagles. We were talking Rams and Panthers. We talked about the Bills and Josh Allen and the Jaguars. We haven't even touched the Bears game yet.
Probably the best game of the weekend.
I've been patient. We have been doing the appetizers, Tenveer, in the first hour, but I just want to be honest with you. We were trying to stay relevant with the teams we talk about, but I don't think I can stay. Jordan Love, Bakersfield grad, so I guess we can go there, but I don't know. I feel bad about pointing that out.
I mean, those three games were great games, objectively, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, doesn't mean that we don't have to get to the last one.
Of course
not. The best one.
You don't want to talk Pats Jags or Pats Chargers before?
Pats Jags a couple years back, you know? Hey, you know, Jags were a little
one of my objectively favorite games, that 2017 AFC Championship.
Very fun game.
Asa yells in my face that Miles Jack wasn't down every single time. And I tell him, I didn't even know you back then. I'm sorry. We decided if we knew each other back then and that game happened, we would not be friends today.
Yeah, I've heard that story before.
Yeah, we would not actually be friends. So I'm glad we persevered and lived through it in terms of it. Anyways, all right, let's do a Who's Been Naughty, Who's Been Nice, and this we'll get into Bears Packers, I'm sure, in the Benatti and Benice of it all. Tenveer, where are we starting on the Who's Been Naughty, Who's Been Nice segment? Where do we want to go first?
Let's go with the nice, because I do want to bring up a naughty at the end.
Okay, sounds good. Let's go to a Benice first, and let's go to it. And just kudos and applause. Just the Robert Saleh performance on Sunday has to be dissected just a little bit more in terms of what he did as a defensive coordinator, just the ability to negate so much of what the Eagles were doing well down the stretch of that game. Like, what happened to the Eagles' run game in terms of it? There were moments when Saquon Barkley was gashing that offense or gashing that defense, and then there are moments where you're sitting there and there's penetration to the backside of the play. There's tackles for losses in terms of that as well. I don't know if I have a TFL counter for the Niners, but I got here 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven TFLs for the Niners. Like, Tanvir, if I asked you before the game how many TFLs the Niners would have before that game, you would put the number at like 1.5, I would imagine.
I might have said 0.
Yeah. Seven TFLs in that game yesterday. The penetration, the gap control. There were shaky moments, not going to lie. But for the most part, with doing this with Wallow, guys with like named Wallow and Eric Kendricks and Marcus Siegel, Diamo, Upton Stout, Mustafa. I mean, there's names out there. Keon White got a sack. You know, Okwuanu, you know, we're just making things happen. Bryce Huff was out there doing some things against his former team, right? Just the remarkable scheme. And yes, I think part of the credit goes to the Eagles just stunting themselves with how bad their offensive game plan was. But you take what you get. I'm not going to discredit Robert Saleh and what he was able to do there, but I will credit him in terms of the game plan and the scheme and the frustration that he caused Philly all evening long.
Yeah, I love Robert Saleh because he allows the players to make plays. And for a defensive coordinator, you know, that is very undermanned, I would say, to still have the trust in those guys to tell them this is your assignment, but still being able to walk down and come down on these running backs and these tight ends to make plays in the backfield. I think it's just a perfect game plan from Robert Saleh, still trusting his guys, trusting the next men up. But for a defensive coordinator that has been amazing over these last couple of years for the 49ers, there is still a hope that he doesn't leave. And we will see. There's been a lot of teams that have requested to have an interview with Robert Saleh, and, you know, rightfully so, because that guy was not given a fair shake with the New York Jets. But, you know, that it's just a great defensive coordinator, great coaching staff up there in San Francisco.
And how about all intents and purposes, because I'm going to say the Niners had no penalties on Sunday. Outside of the BS,
was crazy.
The one where Cleveland Farrell had the phantom, what was it, a helmet?
It was a
late hit.
Yeah, it was unnecessary roughness, 15-yard penalty, late hit.
Even though Jalen Hurts was literally sliding at the same time Farrell was launching himself.
If you look at it, like, the worst contact was he just, like, the secondary play, I forgot. I think it was Mustafa, if I'm not mistaken, just fell on Hurts.
Yeah.
Wild
penalty. I just couldn't wrap my head around that kind of call. Anyways, so all intents and purposes, the Niners didn't commit a single penalty. No dumb pass interferences downfield. No panic plays. That was the big highlight of me as well with that defensive performance. And I think that showed that the Niners were really prepared, really ready for that game plan, to trust the game plan, because sometimes you get a little mixed up in your decision making if you're not quite sure exactly what the opponent is doing. Felt like the Niners were as prepared as a team on that unit as I think anybody. This outside of maybe New England's defense, and we'll get New England's defense.
That's why I wanted to bring up somebody on the naughty list, but we'll do it at the end.
Yeah, certainly. Let's go to a naughty and let's eviscerate the Packers. Let's the sequence of the way I experienced this game was at about 21-9 when the Bears just kind of kicked that field goal just because they just kind of needed to. To make it 21-9, I sat there and put the mental math in my head, and I was like, yeah, the Bears are coming back and winning this game in some form or fashion. It's going to be dumb. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be weird. It's going to be strange. And all the help and the benefit comes from Matt LaFleur's horrible, horrible timeout management at the stretch end of the game, right? The Packers, who were settling for a field goal attempt towards the tail end. Hold on. Let me see if I can pull up the sequences of timeouts here, right? Green Bay calls a timeout after a second and 10 when they threw a deep pass incomplete to Musgrave to the end zone. They needed to call a timeout because they weren't lined up correctly. So that was the first timeout burn from Green Bay. Then out of the timeout, you get a delay of game penalty in that situation. So you lose 5 yards. And then you do another deep pass to Romeo Doubs that has no prayer to the end zone. And so your play calling just horrendous down the stretch that led to Brett McManus having no field goal. And then when Chicago's driving, you call a timeout because you think your player is going to get dinged for a 5-yard penalty of too many men on the field when he actually was off the field before they snapped the ball. But because you're so scared of it, then you lose a timeout that way. Oh, my goodness. Just horrendous management. Of course, Green Bay needed those timeouts down the stretch, and the mismanagement of the players substituting and moving around and horrible, horrible stuff from the Packers down the stretch. LaFleur, I don't know what kind of argument you can make of him deserving more money that I hear a lot of people are talking about, but the Packers, one of the absolute horrible, worst collapses I've seen in a playoff in a long time.
Yeah, an absolute abhorrent collapse from the Green Bay Packers, which I think that Matt LaFleur has a lot to do about it. I mean, this is a guy that's 3-6 now in the playoffs. He's had some bad losses, some bad losses to the Buccaneers. He was still with the Packers when he faced the Niners in the NFC Championship. Even the Niners in the divisional round had a loss against the Eagles last year, lost this year. I mean, it is just a constant, terrible performance from this offense. If you just look at the first four drives out of the second or the out of the first half, punt, 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 and you have a total of 3 3-and-outs. And a 5-play drive right after that. So just terrible play calling. Jordan Love, I think, has a lot of blame to be had as well for his lack of execution. I mean, the amount of incomplete passes that he had. I mean, yes, he had the touchdown drive to
24 for 46. That's 22 incompletions. He almost had as many incompletions as completion.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. But I think that the issue became that they became too aggressive in terms of their willingness to try and extend this lead, and therefore they paid for it. And the defensive side of the ball, they just could not catch the momentum back. And even when Matthew Golden got that touchdown in that fourth quarter, I just felt like the Bears would come back. So a big props to the Bears, but the Packers, this is going to sting for a very long time.
Yeah. Boy, what a calamity for the Packers. I don't got much more to say about it. I do want to get to the Bears side of it because there's props to go to it. But yeah, LaFleur gets my first Benatti. Let's go to my next Benice. And I got to compliment my team. I've been restrained, Tenveer, from trying to really give the flowers I need to give.
I have told you all year you're being too nice, too not nice to this team. This is a team that is very good.
I know, very good team, and the Patriots showed it off very much. And just it almost felt unfair to the Chargers with how big that defense performed in that game last night. And the defense, is that the most complete performance by any unit in the playoffs of those five games? Is that defense the most dominant performance of any unit of all of those teams? I think I could argue that from the Patriots defensive side. Just the way the sequence of plays going through, the interception, and what a massive turnaround for the Patriots to just not give up anything on that first and goal sequence where the Chargers really couldn't muster up anything in the end zone. Harbaugh goes for it when you kind of feel like on the road you need points when you need it, and then he kind of gets conservative on the next time he's down there in that opportunity. And then from then on, the second half, the Patriots are just teeing off on Justin Herbert to the point where it got dangerous. It felt like it got dangerous for Justin Herbert in that fashion. But Milton Williams, his presence was felt in this game. You had 6 sacks in this game, including 2 with Clavon Chase on, who was incredible last night. Christian Gonzalez was incredible. I hope he gets out of concussion protocol by the time they get to the next week. But I don't think he had a single completion thrown to him in that game yesterday as well. And the defensive line and the ability to just create pressure from the ability to move the offensive line like 8 yards down the field at certain points is just insane to me. And Patriots defense just befuddling Jim Harbaugh in that offense.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for the New England Patriots defense was their ability to stop the momentum when the Chargers got it. The Chargers got an interception on basically in their red zone in the first quarter. They stopped them on a turnover on downs. The Patriots had a fumble in that third quarter, another four-play that drive that ended. And so for the Patriots to do that on defense and take advantage of the lack of offensive tackle strength that they had with the loss of Rashawn Slater and Joe Alt, it was just a complete performance from the Patriots defense of the likes that I haven't seen in years. And I think there's a lot of positives that you can take out of this game, not just because of the performance, but the ability to stop the momentum when the Chargers got the ball back in some very advantageous positions.
Felt old school. Just felt old school.
Very old school, yeah.
Just kind of an old school, like, early 2000s football game, the way it played out that way. Anyways, let's get rolling here. Next, Benatti. I will kill Dave Canales for one thing. And I was looking at the stats here. I was pouring over in the show prep. Just the complete, and I feel like the game can go differently for the Panthers if he just leaned on the run a little bit more. I don't know what his aversion was to design to go to Rico Daldo more or Chuba Hubbard more in certain situations. He had the Panthers had design run plays percentage only 30% of their plays on Saturday, the lowest, fourth lowest in a game this season for the Panthers, and it wasn't really like a game where they felt like they needed to pass the ball so many times. They were in it throughout the whole game back and forth. It just felt like, I'm going to make Bryce win this game for us, and that's how we're going to do it. Now, I know you had to throw it when the time needed to when you're down with 38 seconds to go, but I think there was a little more – there could have been a little more control from the offense like it did the last time they beat the Panthers – or last time they beat the Rams, and the Panthers could have controlled that game a little bit more if they just ran it. But I don't know. I just don't know the aversion to what I think is a decent running unit, one of the strengths of the Panthers side, and they only ran it 30% of the time.
Yeah, and this has been kind of an issue with this team for the last couple of weeks. Ever since Rico Dowdle had that explosion in the middle of the season, they really didn't know how to balance this running attack when Chuba Hubbard came back. And so I think that, sure, you can kill Dave Canales for that, but I personally wouldn't. I still think that they played a good enough game. It was a good enough scheme in that passing attack to not kill Dave Canales for this game. I think the Panthers played their hearts out. I think that they could do you know, whatever they wanted to in the passing game in that game. And so for him to do that in his first playoff game, I'm not going to kill him for it. So I would actually disagree with this, Naughty, and include Kevin Petullo.
Okay, that's fine. I want to still kill Canales on the fourth down calls, all three of them.
Sure.
The designs were – to me, I didn't enjoy the fourth down plays whatsoever.
Yeah, I think when a team is cooking like they are in terms of the passing game, it's going to, you know, you got to go there. So I can agree with that, but I still wouldn't put him on this
list. All right, go to Petullo real quick.
Dude, this guy, absolutely. I'm not even an Eagles fan. He absolutely stinks at play calling. If you wanted to have a terrible offense with the amount of weapons that this team has on paper, it is a crime that this team has not been a juggernaut on the offensive side of the ball. Yes, they lost their offensive coordinator to the New Orleans Saints, Kellen Moore, and he was a great play caller for that team in season's end. But this is no excuse to run the same four plays twice on the last game or last drive of the game for the win. It is just terrible play calling. You didn't use A.J. Brown. And for all we want to say about A.J. Brown and how much of a quote-unquote diva he was, he has been telegraphing this for weeks now. And so I just think that Kevin Petullo needs to get out of there. It's not his fault alone, because I think the execution on the player's standpoint was also bad, but just a terrible performance on the offensive side of the ball for them.
There you go. Petullo deserves this sad trauma.
So deserves it.
Let's go to my Benice real quick. And we don't need to talk about the greatness of the Bears offense in that comeback, but I just want to just say to Ben Johnson, thank you for creating a rivalry, in the NFL. Like, F the Packers in the locker room, let's go. And the owner says, yeah, why not?
He doubles down with, I hate the Packers.
Let's get hostile. I love it. And you know, it is growing on me. You got to back it up. He did with a victory, and I think we are. I know the rivalry is like one of the oldest in the NFL, if not the oldest. But I'm enjoying the juice that is being brought to this rivalry now. I am excited for Packer Bear games.
it's weird because this is something that I don't necessarily see a lot in some other leagues. It is the true rivalries. I think in basketball, it's really an issue. I think the Spurs and the Thunder are kind of like creating that now. But I mean, to create that out of, you know, a moment like that, good for Ben Johnson for bringing true rivalries back. And I mean, this is how people would talk in reality. Like, let's not be for real.
Yeah.
Or let's be for real. Sorry. That people hate other teams. And to just say it outwardly, it's not some sort of sin, in my opinion. I think Ben Johnson said what was on his mind, and it was perfect for the future of this rivalry because I think it has had a little bit of resurgence. Let's not forget, Aaron Rodgers was screaming, "I own you," for like 10 years. So yeah. I don't think it's bad that the Bears came back and did that to them in their first playoff win in years.
Yeah. I think if there's only one other rivalry I could think of, like if you gave truth serum to Bill Belichick, he would say that about the Jets. Like that's just every game he played the Jets, he wanted to do that to him. Anyways, let's go to my last Benatti. It's a bonus Benatti. Just real quick, I'm going to clear out the floor and play ISO here real quick.
No, go ahead.
And I'm giving it to my Red Sox. I know it's an NFL segment, but what are we doing here with the Red Sox? Alex Bregman signing with the Cubs, and this is your plan? You fools. You Red Sox owners and GMs, you fools. The whole point of Rafael Devers playing first base was to move him from third to first, was to sign Alex Bregman and make him the cornerstone of the franchise. And what do? You trade away Devers because he didn't want to do that. And so you said, good riddance, we're going to make Bregman our guy. And what do? You let Bregman be a guy for one season and play fantastic for you. And what do? You pay him less money and you offer him less money and you let the Chicago Cubs take him away. And now you have nothing. You have nothing at third base. You fools. There is nothing that is good that came out of what the Red Sox did over the last couple of years. This franchise is a joke. This franchise is trash. This franchise can go into the gutter. My God, I am so mad about the Alex Bregman situation. Congratulations, Giants. You got Rafael Devers on such a good deal, and I hope you enjoy him for the next 10 years. I'm done.
Yeah, that was bad. Even me as a casual MLB fan, I think I've actually learned a lot more over the last couple of years. That was terrible. And now a trio of Kyle Tucker, PCA, and Bregman in that outfield is going to be, or just in that defense, is going to be absolutely insane.
Bring on the lockout. Let's take a break. Let's go.
It's not the Dodgers. It's the Cubs.
I don't want baseball in my life right now. Bring on the lockdown. All right, let's go to break. Behind the Bench returns on 1430 ESPN. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. There's a little story that was going around that some people are making. I would say they're making a mountain out of a molehill over in the National Football League. Timber, you know what I'm talking about?
I probably will once you say it. I actually don't.
Yeah. There was an exchange between a reporter and Liam Cohen at the end of a game.
It was like the sweet exchange, right? No, you're talking about a different one.
They were talking about a reporter who the name escapes me on it, but you know, just thanking Liam Cohen for the job they did this year and job he did this year, and you know, just being proud of the way he coached his team this season. And Adam Schefter was the first to kind of tweet it out and saying it was an awesome moment between press and coach. And then there was this wave of vitriol coming from fellow media folks.
See, I didn't see that.
Yes.
So I didn't know that there was a negative backlash.
There has been a massive negative backlash to the idea that somebody saying that is a waste of time, is unprofessional, and is not you doing your job in the capacity of what some people qualify as a level of professionalism you should have at a press conference. But to me, I always go to this mantra for me in sports. And to me, it is always not that serious. I think Liam Cohen was having a very human moment in that time. It's raw. It's emotional. The Jaguars had one of the greatest seasons of their history in terms of wins. and having a host a playoff game, and they just finished battling against what people may argue the greatest quarterback of the generation he plays in, arguably. I know the wins aren't there, but we'll see. But sorry to sideswipe Josh Allen there real quick. My bad. But what I do think is, I think there has to be a line of considering the messaging and considering the things that people say about each other in this world. I like to look on the bright side of things in that sense. And I like to think that in a moment like that, when there's finality to the season and you're reaching out as a human moment to somebody that you think you can be a human to, I think there's something there. I think there's something that this woman was allowed to do in talking to Liam Cohen that way and praising him for his job he did, because that's just being a human. And I don't think there needs to be this veneer between the relationship of the coach versus the relationship of the press. I think there is always can be a relationship between the two entities. Now, I understand people have to say, well, once you get a little more good with the coaches or whatever, you can probably lose your ability to have a bias or whatnot, or avoid the biases because you care about them as a person. But then that's the point of it, is because you want to show that you have the relationship to the people so you can get the best information possible to the people that pay money to go see their team play those games. And so I just think it's important to realize that I appreciate someone being a decent human to another human in a vulnerable moment. And I think that's all it is. And I get it. Some people want to be curmudgeons about it, but I don't have a problem with it, and that's just where I'm at. And I'll leave it at that. I don't know if you have any...
I mean, this is somebody of... I just looked at Jacksonville Free Press. This is in a large majority sports publication. And so for somebody to be human and be nice about it, I think there's a difference to a large majority of people doing that to mm-hmm. just one person doing that. And let's be honest, half of these questions that these people... ask, you know, these coaches are absolutely horrendous and just ridiculous. So I don't have a problem with it. I didn't realize that there was the spark of negativity that it really had. But
yeah,
let's be for real. What else would you like to know? If you are good at doing your job, you'll understand what happened in the play. And understanding what the emotional well-being or the state of well-being of the coach is for once, I don't really have a problem with it. But yeah, it's... there's a lot of hate in this world. Just be nice once in a while.
Exactly. Tanvir, you were in the locker room after the Niners had probably a very gut-wrenching loss. And, you know, those guys were feeling human moments and probably frustration and anger. And it's hard to be in a room like that, hard to experience that with the guys. And you just try to be as decent as you can be to them. And I imagine you can kind of share the sentiment and, if the time is right, there's a moment where you sit there. I'm like, man, I just feel bad for those guys, for what they went through and how they built up to that moment. And then it doesn't happen for them. You feel that. Now, in our Niners example, when we were there a couple weeks ago, the season's not over and the season's still not over for Liam Cohen in that situation. The season's over. There's a finality to it. So if the Niners were eliminated that night, Tim Beer, I think it'd be a little bit of a different story.
For sure. Yeah.
But okay, let's touch on some news here. Hey, Fresno State news. I got some Fresno State news for y'all here, and boy, it's big. I've been holding it for the show here for a little bit now, but let's get to it. And this top sports story brought to you by Valley Pure, announced by Fresno State, announced on Twitter by himself, Rashawn Speedy Luke, announcing he's back on the roster for the Fresno State Bulldogs. He will stay, and one of the big weapons, if not the biggest weapon the Bulldogs have on offense, is going to be a Bulldog next year. The retention of Speedy Luke is a massive, massive story for this roster and what its construction will look like moving forward. Of course, the other news that happened over the weekend, Carson Conklin announcing he will enter the transfer portal as well. So maybe a little clarity on what the quarterback position will look like. No more EJ Warner, no more Carson Conklin now. Of course, Christian Martin is the new name people will have to get to used to know. Of course, there's Jaden Mandel that's still there. Of course, there's the couple of freshmen, including notably Deegan Rose there. But I don't want to move ahead of myself real quick. Just quickly on the reaction of Rayshon Speedy Luke and him being here for this team. That is such a massive lockup for the Bulldogs in terms of their offensive potency. You need a running back like that to help get a quarterback grooved into the season, I would imagine, who is going to play for their first year as a Bulldog, as a starter. That is a guarantee now once Carson Conklin leaves the transfer portal there. So what a massive get, and it just continues to prove what is working inside this program for Coach Entz is the retention, the ability to sell a program based off of it. I would imagine there are teams out there currently who got eliminated in the playoff or got close to making the playoff in a group of five situation that could look at Rayshon Speedy Luke and say, I could use a guy like that. And I think there is something to the idea that Coach Entz is able to retain him. And now I'm so excited about this domino falling for this roster today.
Yeah, I think that this guy was clearly the number one guy to get back into the locker room. I think that he is the most athletic, the most electric player for this team. And for all the losses that the defensive side had, I felt like it was imperative that he was going to be back in that backfield for the Fresno State Bulldogs. So it is a massive get for this team. I think he's going to be able to get more touches this year. And now sometimes when we get electrifying players get more touches after being in a secondary role, it's kind of a change of pace back. They don't play as well, and that's my kind of concern. But I think Speedy Luke will be able to get back into the flow of things and become a real game changer as the number one running back for this squad going into the 2025 season. So, big get for them. Conklin, on the other hand, my concern was the quarterback coming in. Were we going to have to start a Mandel, which I think is still a decent player to start. There's going to be a quarterback battle again this year. And now that Coach Entz has had that happen to him already this season, he's going to understand what he wants to see out of a quarterback going into this year's quarterback battle. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that works out. But I actually think this transfer portal has been quite nice to the Fresno State Bulldogs in all totality, besides the Richie Anderson loss.
I'm trying to think just in the totality of what they've gotten in terms of that. They added a corner. I remember like a physical corner, at least.
Two Cornhuskers.
Yeah, a couple Cornhuskers.
Maverick Noonan is an edge rusher, and then Preston Okafor, the DB.
I'm excited. Yeah, Okafor 6'2". I kind of like length. I am a big sucker for lengthy corners. Like, I rooted for Stephon Gilmore as a Patriot for so long, and he's kind of like that lengthy corner kind of guy. I think you think of Sherman as kind of your lengthy corner kind of guy in terms of that for you. I think there's obviously some things addressed from the transfer portal that the Dogs are hitting on. It's just a matter of what more pieces can continue to be added. You can never have enough pass rushing for me. And I think that's maybe one more area. I'm like, let's see what other things we can kind of get there. Offensive line depth, I think I still am more interested in seeing a name here or there pop in. But for the most part, I think the needs.
I think a tight end.
A tight end, too.
For sure. To replace the Anderson production.
I think Tarwater is no longer. I think he's graduated. Am I remembering that right? Jake Tarwater, real quick. What year was he? He's a junior. All right. So he was injured at the end of last year. So hopefully he'll be back in terms of that as well. But I think for the most part, and they're still. What, four more days left of this portal?
Yeah.
The portal ends on the 15th, am I mistaken, or the 16th?
I think it's the 16th. Let me double check that.
Yeah. The portal ends this week. I know that for sure in terms of it. How about we got
16th.
We got our kicker. You see who we got?
I did not.
We got a kicker as well. Forgive me for not having the name in front of me. Let me see if I can. Manaki Watanabe from Ashley University, I think it was, or I think it was Ashland, excuse me, Ashland, D2 Ashland. He was 21 for 22 in his field goals made last year with a long of 59 yards, Tanvir. So how about Manaki Watanabe? Can we do the Hawaii thing where we have the Japanese letters on the back of our...
Oh, that'd be sick. That'd be so fire.
Yeah. Asa told me if he does that, he's getting that jersey immediately.
getting a kicker's jersey for Fresno State would be something. But I mean that's a collector's item in my opinion.
He just tweeted, by the way, he had a new PR, 62 yards. He had a 62-yarder in practice, Watanabe did. And that was tweeted out in 2024, actually. So never mind. That was a couple years ago. But all right. I like kicking. I like kicking. I like good kicking. I like having kicking. Dylan Lynch, you know, serviceable. But let's have a weapon. Let's have a weapon. I would grade what the transfer portal has seen. The retention's what I'm really excited about. It's like there just isn't many like big names going out of here from this roster to me, which what does that indicate for you? Is it just that the coaching has really helped this team get to where it was at 9 wins, yeah. 9-4? And does the landscape not respect the talent that's here? I'm wondering if that's the case. And there is just an overlooked nature of it, which I'm fine with. I'm okay with that being overlooked. Or are we getting the most out of the players we have? And maybe it is just simply the amount of talent we're getting out of our players. I'm wondering if that's kind of the result of the reason why we're not really getting poached as much as I thought we would.
Yeah, I think actually it is because of the coaching staff and how good they have been able to come in, change the trajectory of what Fresno State football was looking like 2 years ago,
yeah.
And now trying to move into the future. And just looking at the guys that have been retained over the last couple of days, as you said, Rayshon Luke has been retained, Simeon Harris been retained, Kavion Thunderbird has been retained. So you're talking about some massive players for this team that obviously would have big impacts on other teams. And for them to come back, I think it is a testament to how good Matt Entz has done over this first year and going into next year. I wonder what the consensus will be for this team. I think we're almost done with the transfer portal, but I think it's going to be interesting to see what this team's expectations will be going into next year, because I think there is a case there to say that the expectations will be higher because this is Matt Entz's second year.
There probably will be one or two more surprises, I would say, or one or two more moves left in terms of that. So I'm looking for in the next couple of days. And I think it'd be a good idea. I'm going to hit him up to get Jackson Moore on Friday to get a totality look at this. I do have Gabe Camarillo coming on tomorrow to talk about what we've seen so far in this portal and just in general Fresno State conversation as well. So we'll get a little more in depth on that conversation tomorrow with that. So that should be good. All right, Tim Veer, let's take a break and let's finally look forward to this final game that is set to be kicking off here pretty soon. Texans and Steelers, we make our predictions, we make our picks, we talk about the keys, all of that next on 1430 ESPN. Hi, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Little reminder of what we got coming up in the next couple days. In just a matter of minutes, Steelers and Texans live in the NFC wild or AFC wild card, wrapping up that weekend there. Winner will take on the New England Patriots on a TBD time on Sunday. We'll probably know the schedule tomorrow. We'll know by the end of tonight's game what the schedule will look like for next weekend. Speaking of schedule stuff, Tanvir, you got some gripes about the Niners getting the short week? You were a little more...
Yeah.
I have some people who are mad, like big mad about the NFL.
Well, okay, so the two games that they selected was Rams-Bears, right? For the Sunday game?
Rams-Bears and Pats, whoever.
So, yeah, that to me, the Monday night winner was going to play on Sunday regardless.
Yeah.
I think it should have been Rams-Bears on Saturday because both of them have that week.
Both of them played Saturday.
Niners-Seahawks should have been on Sunday.
And then you would have had the Niners on an actual week schedule. But the Niners didn't get home till like 2 a.m. local Pacific time Monday, today. And then they're expected to just kind of turn around and get going here on their work week in terms of that.
So what that tells me is that they believe that the Seahawks-Niners game will not be more entertaining than Rams-Bears because they don't want to stack Bills-Broncos with Rams-Bears and then have, I guess, the two less entertaining games, quote-unquote, with Patriots slash versus Texans slash Steelers and Seahawks-Niners on the same day, which is absolutely ridiculous to me.
Or is it a maximizing your advantage as the one seed to get the two teams that are short on your week? Because the Bills are in the same scenario as you guys. The Bills have they got the short week too.
And I know that generally the one seed does play on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as mad because I just think that you're going to go through the slog regardless. Yes, you can make it a little
easier. It's better if you... it's not a big deal to me because, like, you're going to play Seattle. You should know who Seattle is. You don't need the regular weeks to get ready for Seattle. Like, it'd be nice, but let's be honest. Like, you should know who Seattle is after two games.
And for this 49ers team, this is besides the point, but this team has now beaten every team in the top five in the NFC.
Yeah.
And that is very insane. But back to the point, I just think that this team is going to have to go through this anyway. Would I like to have it on Sunday? Yes, for sure. But I'm not like appalled by it because it's just what the schedule is. And you got to still go out there and beat the team that you got to beat. The positive is that you have won a game now and you have momentum, mm-hmm. unlike the number one seeds who have been resting on their laurels for a week. And so that's kind of the positive negative kind of gain and loss that you get with these kind of matchups.
And once a day, like between Ricky Pearsall potentially being ready for that game, I wonder if that's like the scenario that the Niner fans or Niner, even the Niner coaches are like, oh man, if we had Sunday, I'd maybe feel good about Ricky. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it all.
For sure.
A lot of questions. All right, let's look at tonight's game. Daily Spread brought to you by Chancy Gold Resort and Casino. If you're not trying your luck with your team, try your luck up the mountain at Chancy Gold Resort and Casino today. Steelers, Texans in Pittsburgh. The Steelers are a 3-point dog at home. Is that disrespectful or is that the right number, Tanvir, for you in tonight's game between these two teams?
I think it is the right number. I think that this Texans team has been playing solid defense. They've gone on the road to get some big wins over the last couple of weeks. I think they're still on their winning streak, if I'm not mistaken. And so now they're going against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who I know a lot of people would have said is probably the worst team of the playoffs of the last 14. I wouldn't have said that because I think that they have still shown some promise on the running game with those two running backs. But I think it is a proper line for the matchup that we have.
The Calvary comes back for the Pittsburgh Steelers. DK Metcalf is back. And by the way, if you're talking NFL history in the playoffs, Tanvir, minimum of four games played, DK Metcalf has the most yards, receiving yards per game in NFL history. If you're going minimum four games played in the playoffs, he averages 112.8 yards per game. The next closest is Puka at 108.3. Nico Collins on that list at 7, by the way, at 91.8. So will we see fireworks in this game tonight? Who knows what that brings? Aaron Rodgers usually can have the ability to do so. They're going to have to do some really intricate moving the pocket, getting around the rush, finding Rodgers areas to throw the ball. He cannot just sit there in the middle of that pocket and hope he has time to get the ball where it needs to go. But I think there's a more intriguing matchup for me is what Pittsburgh's defense can do to frustrate Houston's offense, especially Houston's struggling offensive line. Offensive lines, we see it struggle on the road sometimes, and we saw it yesterday with the Chargers specifically. I would imagine it could end up being that situation. You know, TJ Watt back from injury as well. I think there is a path for this Steeler team to definitely win this game tonight. The Texans weren't like world beaters stopping Riley Leonard last week in a game that they kind of wanted to win because it was close between them and Jacksonville. And then, of course, they would have dropped down a seed potentially if they lost that game. So I think prediction-wise, my Patriot fandom wants the Steelers to win tonight. But I just don't know if I can quite get there offensively with what the Steelers can do over that Texans defense. I think it'll be a lower scoring battle for sure. But I do think the Texans find a way. They'll have a defensive touchdown, I think, in this game in some form or fashion. And I will roll with the Houston Texans tonight to advance and play the New England Patriots next week. What do you got, Tanvir?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with the pick that I had before the playoffs started. I think the Houston Texans will go in there and win. But if there's any quarterback that I am rooting for in these playoffs, it is Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has been a guy that I loved for years, even though I am a Niners fan, and I did destroy his heart last a couple of times, you know, three times, I think four times maybe. But regardless, I think that guy has been a legend, and so I will be rooting for him in quite possibly his last playoff game of his career. So I do have the Texans. I don't think they cover, though. I think the Steelers will lose by three or less.
CJ Stroud can do something that only three quarterbacks in NFL history have ever done. Those quarterbacks, Russell Wilson, Joe Flacco, and Otto Graham, and that is win a playoff game in the first three seasons of their NFL career. CJ Stroud can do that with a game tonight. And by the way, the other monkey on the back of the Texans is they have yet to win a game on the road in NFL history in the playoffs. So that is another thing to pay attention to. Got kind of close last year, you know, like not close, like close against Kansas City, but I thought there was a modicum.
A horrible roughing the passer call away from.
Yeah. Yes.
It went against the Chiefs.
Yes. Who are you most like? If there's a key player on either side outside of the quarterbacks, why don't you pick the Texan? I'm going to pick the Steeler, and we can kind of we'll go from there. Who's your key Texan?
Key Texan on either side of the ball.
Either side of the ball. Anybody?
Give me Derek Stingley. You know, for a DK Metcalf that has been hyper targeted by Aaron Rodgers, Derek Stingley, I think, is a top three corner in this league, and I think he will be able to shut down DK Metcalf, regardless of those statistics you've said. DK Metcalf is 1-3 in the playoffs.
Give me Kenneth Gainwell for the Steelers tonight in terms of being just a different kind of guy that unlocks some things for the offense every which way he can kind of go. He's been coming along strong since basically that Lions game. I look at Kenneth Gainwell as a guy who could maybe cause some frustration with his speed and what he can do in the open field against Houston. So, all right, should be good. I'm rooting for the Steelers as a Patriots fan, and that's what I'll say about that. But regardless, I'm excited for whatever opponent comes. All right, Tanvir, great show today. Appreciate it as always. Jorge, appreciate him for joining us as well. Pittsburgh, Houston, next on 1430.